Chapter 29. The next day, Sean took Katrina to the most exclusive ladies' shop in Pretoria. He chose the material for half a dozen dresses. One of them was to be a ball gown in canary yellow silk. It was extravagance, and he knew it. But he didn't care once he saw the flash of guilty delight in Katrina's cheeks and the old green sparkle in her eyes. For the first time since the fever, she was living again. He spilled out his sovereigns with thankful abandon. The sales girls were delighted with him. They crowded round him with trays of feminine accessories. "A dozen of those," said Sean, and "Yes, those will do." Then a flash of green on the racks across the room caught his eye. It was Katrina's green. "What's that?" He pointed, and two sales girls nearly knocked each other down in the rush to get it for him. The winner carried the shawl back to him, and Sean took it and placed it around Katrina's shoulders. It was a beautiful thing. "We'll take it," said Sean. And Katrina's lips quivered. Then suddenly she was crying, sobbing brokenly. The excitement had been too much. There was immediate consternation among the shop assistants. They flapped around Sean like hens at feeding time while he picked Katrina up and carried her out to the hired carriage. At the door he paused and spoke over his shoulder. "I want those dresses finished by tomorrow evening. Can you do it?"
"They'll be ready, Mr. Courtney, even if my girls have to work all night on them."
He took Katrina back to the wagons and laid her on her cot.
"Please forgive me, Sean. I've never done that in my life before."
"It's all right, my fancy. I understand. Now you just go to sleep." The following day, Katrina stayed at the camp, resting, while Sean went to see Mr. Goldberg again and buy from him the stores they'd need for the next expedition. It took another day to load the wagons, and by then Katrina seemed well enough to make the journey to Johannesburg. They left in the early afternoon, Ember Janey driving, Sean and Katrina sitting close together on the back seat, holding hands under the travelling rug, and Dirk bouncing round the interior of the carriage, pausing now and then to flatten his face against a window and keep up a flow of comment in the peculiar mixture of English, Dutch, and Zulu that Sean called Dirkese. They reached Johannesburg long before Sean expected to. In 4 years the town had doubled its size and had spread out into the veldt to meet them. They followed the main road through the new areas and came to the centre. There were changes here as well, but it was in the main the way he remembered it. They threaded their way through the babble of Elof Street, and around them, mingling with the crowds on the sidewalks, were the ghosts of the past. He heard Duff laugh and twisted quickly in his seat to place the sound. A dandy in a boater hat with gold fillings in his teeth laughed again from a passing carriage, and Sean heard that it was not Duff's laugh. Very close, but not the same. All of it was like that. Similar but subtly changed. Nostalgic but sad with the knowledge of loss. The past was lost, and he knew then that you can never go back. Nothing's the same. For reality can exist at one time only and in one place only. Then it dies and you've lost it, and you must go on to find it at another time and in another place. They took a suite at the Grand National, with a sitting room and two bedrooms, a private bathroom, and a balcony that looked out over the street, over the rooftops, to where the headgears and white dumps stood along the ridge. Katrina was exhausted. They had supper sent up to the room early, and when they'd eaten, Katrina went to bed, and Sean went down alone to drink a nightcap at the bar. The barroom was crowded. Sean found a seat in the corner and sat silently in the jabber of conversation, in it, but no longer a part of it. They had changed the picture above the bar. It used to be a hunting print. But now it was a red-coated general, impressively splattered with blood, taking leave of his staff in the middle of a battlefield. The staff looked bored. Sean let his eyes wander on along the dark panelled walls. He remembered. There was so much to remember. Suddenly he blinked. Near the side door was a star-shaped crack in the wooden panelling. Sean started to grin and put down his glass and massaged the knuckles of his right hand. If Oakie Henderson hadn't ducked under that punch, it would have taken his head off. Sean signalled to the barman. "Another brandy, please." While the man was pouring, Sean asked, "What happened to that panel near the door?" The man glanced up, then backed the bottle. "Some fella put his fist through it in the old days. Boss left it like that, sort of souvenir, you know. He must have been quite a fellow. That wood's an inch thick." "Who was he?" Sean asked expectantly. The man shrugged. "One of the drifters. They come and they go. Make a few pounds, piss it against the wall, then go back where they came from." He looked at Sean with bored eyes. "That'll be half a dollar, mate." Sean drank the brandy slowly, turning the glass in his hands between sips and watching the liquor cling to its sides like thin oil. "By a cracked panel in a bar room, they shall remember you." "And now I shall go to bed," he decided. "This is no longer my world. My world is upstairs sleeping, I hope." He smiled a little to himself and finished the brandy in his glass. "Sean!" A voice at his ear and hand on his shoulder as he turned to leave. "My God, Sean, is it really you?" Sean stared at the man beside him. He didn't recognize the neatly clipped beard and the big sunburnt nose with the skin peeling off the tip. But suddenly he knew the eyes. "Dennis, you old rogue! Dennis Peterson from Ladyburg. That's right, isn't it? You didn't recognize me?" laughed Dennis. "So much for our friendship. You disappear without a word, and 10 years later you don't even know me." "I thought they would have hanged you long ago," Sean defended himself. "What on earth are you doing in Johannesburg?" "Selling beef. I'm on the committee of the Beef Growers Association." There was pride in Dennis's voice. "I've been up here negotiating the renewal of our contracts." "When are you going back?" "My train leaves in an hour." "Well, there's time for a drink before you go. What'll it be?" "I'll have a small brandy, thanks." Sean ordered the drinks, and they took them up and stood, suddenly awkward in the awareness that 10 years were between their once complete accord. "So, what have you been doing to yourself?" Dennis ended the pause. "This and that, you know. Bit of mining. Just come back from the bushveld. Nothing very exciting." "Well, it's good to see you again anyway. Your health." "And yours," said Sean. And then suddenly he realized that here was news of his family, news he'd been without for many years. "How's everyone at Ladyburg? Your sisters?" "Both married. So am I, with 4 sons. And the pride was in Dennis's voice again. "Anyone I know?" asked Sean. "Audrey. You know, old Pye's daughter." "No," Sean ripped out the word. And then quickly, "That's wonderful, Dennis. I'm pleased for you. She was a lovely girl." "The best," agreed Dennis complacently. He had the sleek, well-fed, well-cared-for look of a married man, fatter in the face and his stomach starting to show. "I wonder if I have it yet," Sean thought. "Course, old man Pye's dead now. That's one creditor he couldn't buy off. Ronnie's taken over the bank and the store." "The bat-eared bush rat," said Sean. and knew immediately that he'd said the wrong thing. Dennis frowned slightly. "He's family now, Sean. Very decent chap, really. And a clever businessman. I'm sorry, I was joking. How's my mother?" Sean changed the subject by asking the question that had been in the forefront of his mind, and he had picked the right topic. Dennis's expression softened immediately. You could see the warmth in his eyes. "The same as ever. She's got a dress shop now, next door to Ronnie's store. It's a gold mine. No one would think of buying anywhere else but at Aunt Ada's. She's godmother to my two eldest. I guess she's godmother to half the kids in the district." And then his expression hardened again. "The least you could have done was write to her sometime, Sean. You can't imagine the pain you've caused her." "There were circumstances." Sean dropped his eyes to his glass. "That's no excuse. You have a duty, which you neglected. There is no excuse for it." "You little man," Sean lifted his head and looked at him without trying to disguise his annoyance. "You pompous, preaching little man, peering out at the world one-eyed through the keyhole of your own self-importance." Dennis hadn't noticed Sean's reaction, and he continued, "That's a lesson a man must learn before he grows up. We all have our responsibilities and our duties. A man grows up when he faces those duties, when he accepts the burdens that society places on him. Take my own case. Despite the vast amount of work I have on the farms, I now earn Mahoboth's Kloof as well. And despite the demands made on me by my family, yet I have time to represent the district on the committee of the Beef Growers Association. I'm a member of the church council and the village management board. And I have every reason to believe that next month I'll be asked to accept the office of mayor." Then he looked steadily at Sean. "What have you done with your life so far?" "I've lived it," Sean answered. And Dennis looked a little perplexed. Then he gathered himself. "Are you married yet?" "I was, but I sold her to the Arab slavers up north."
"You did what?"
"Well," grinned Sean, "she was an old wife, and the price was good."
"Ah, that's a joke, eh? Ha ha!"
You couldn't fool good old Dennis. Sean laughed out loud. This unbelievable little man. "Have a drink, Dennis," he suggested. "Two's my limit, thanks, Sean." Dennis pulled the gold hunter from his waistcoat pocket and inspected it. "Time to go, I'm afraid. Nice to see you again." "Wait," Sean stopped him. "My brother, how's Gary?"
"Poor old Gary,"
Dennis shook his head solemnly. "What's wrong with him?" Sean's voice was sharp with his sense of dread.
"Nothing," Dennis reassured him quickly. "Well, I mean, nothing more than ever was."
"Why did you say poor old Gary, then?"
"Don't know, really, except that everybody says it. It's habit, I suppose. He's just one of those people you say poor old in front of."
Sean suppressed his irritation. He wanted to know. He had to know. "You haven't answered me. How is he?" Dennis made a significant gesture with his right hand. "Looking into the bottle quite a bit these days. Not that I blame him, that woman he married. You were well out of it there, if I may say so, Sean."
"You may,"
Sean acquiesced. "But is he well? How are things at the Thunis Corral?"
"We all took a bit of a beating with the Rindy Pest. But Gary, well, he lost almost half of his herds. Poor old Gary. Everything happens to him."
"My God, 50%.
"Yes, but of course Ronnie helped him out. Gave him a mortgage on the farm to tide him over."
"The Eunice Corral bonded again," groaned Sean.
Oh, Gary, Gary. Yes. Well, Dennis coughed uneasily. Well, I think I'd better be going. Dortien, Sean. And he held out his hand. Shall I tell them I saw you? No, said Sean quickly. Just leave it stand. Very well, then, Sean hesitated. Are you all right, Sean? I mean, he coughed again. Are you all right for money? Sean felt his unhappiness dissolve a little. This pompous little man was going to offer him a loan. That's very good of you, Dennis, but I've got a couple of pounds saved up. Enough to eat on for a few days, he spoke seriously. All right, then. Dennis looked mightily relieved. All right, then. Dortien, Sean. And he turned and walked quickly out of the bar. As he left the room, so he went out of Sean's mind, and Sean was thinking of his brother again. Then suddenly Sean decided, I'll go back to Ladyburg when this next trip is over. The dream farm outside Pal would not lose anything in being transplanted to Natal, and he suddenly longed to sit in the panelled study at the Thunis Corral again, and to feel the mist come cold down the escarpment in the mornings, and to see the spray blowing off the white falls in the wind. He wanted to hear Ada's voice again, and to explain to her, knowing she would understand and forgive. But much, much more, it was Gary. Poor old Gary. I must go back to him. 10 years is a long time, and he'll have lost the bitterness. I must go back to him, for his sake, and for the Thunis Corral. With the decision made, Sean finished his drink and went upstairs to his suite. Katrina was breathing softly in her sleep, the dark mass of her hair spread out on the pillow. While he undressed, he watched her, and slowly the melancholy dissolved. Gently he pulled back the blankets on his side of the bed, and just then Dirk whimpered from the next room. Sean went through to him. All right, what's the trouble? Dirk blinked owlishly and searched for an excuse. Then the relief flooded into his face, and he produced the one that creaked with age.
I want a drink of water.
The delay while Sean went through to the bathroom gave Dirk an opportunity to rally his forces, and when Sean came back, he opened the offensive in earnest.
Tell me a story, Daddy.
He was sitting up now, bright-eyed. I'll tell you a story about Jack and a Nori, said Sean. Not that one, protested Dirk. The saga of Jack and his brother lasted 5 seconds, and Dirk knew it. Sean sat down on the edge of the bed and held the glass for him. How about this one? There once was a king who had everything in the world. But when he lost it, he found that he had never had anything, and that he now had more than he ever had before. Dirk looked stunned.
That's not a very good one,
he gave his opinion at last. No, said Sean. It isn't, is it? But I think we should be charitable and admit that it's not too bad for this time of the night.